to another episode of Untrue Crime, where fiction meets felonies. I'm Alex.
And I'm Belle. Today's episode includes content warnings for child trafficking.
This is your fair warning that this podcast uses explicit language before someone walks in at the wrong time. As a last warning, this episode includes discussion of child trafficking. Let's get this started, shall we?
We shall.
It was a sunny, perfect day in a world very similar to ours when Annie Cosgrave disappeared. Her world held magical properties, though only given to a select few and certainly not known of by the vast majority of the population. Perhaps they played a role in her vanishing right from under the noses of unsuspecting people, or perhaps not, but regardless, there was nothing particularly ominous or threatening about the gorgeous day she disappeared on. Not a single cloud covered the sky, the wind blew pleasantly, and though it was warm, it was the kind of sun one would want to bask in. The only thing one could complain about in regards to the weather would be the high UV index, but before we get to that, let's back up and establish the past. There's the supposed beginning, of course, when Annie was born, but even before that, there was a story to be told. Her mother, Perdita Cosgrave, was 22 when she met Annie's father the year before.
See, I thought you were going to start, like, from the womb. So you're going to be like, Annie had a difficult pregnancy. Annie's pregnancy was particularly challenged. Her mother suffered high blood pressure, and it took a grave effect, a Cosgrave effect on the fetus.
No, we're starting even before that. She's not even in utero yet. Perdita was an artist. She enjoyed making Renaissance fresco-style paintings of all sorts of things, especially classical imagery.
Cheers.
Her whole life, she had been painting. In January, she got the chance to have her art displayed at a gallery in her hometown of New Haven, Connecticut.
Is this woman rich? Like, New Haven?
She's definitely upper middle class. She's not struggling.
Okay. Well, I mean, she's a painter.
Yes.
Painters traditionally need money to, especially in the modern day, not in the past. In the past, they could be hired by a rich person as like a little pet, a little friend. But,
well, she's in school, but you know, her parents are paying for her school completely. Like, she's not struggling. She's doing okay.
And she does art, so she's got like
in the free time. Yeah,
paints, canvases, brushes. I mean, if you're like committed to art, that's like a lot.
She definitely just calls her mommy and daddy and asks if she can have more money for paint supplies.
What is she majoring in? Is it also art? Is she that rich?
Art history.
Oh. Wow. That's really good for her. I'm glad she's following her passions in New Haven, Connecticut.
A man approached one of her paintings in awe.
Boo. A man.
He was tall, with curly, golden blonde hair, and a face that looked like it could belong to a Greek statue.
But it didn't. So, like, who's to say?
Listen, I don't know if you have ever seen some of those statues, but I have. And smash. But not literally, because then they would be gone, because they're statues. Public service announcement. Do not smash Greek classical statues. Those should be in museums.
I'm so glad that you've gotten your 2 cents in.
Greek museums. By the way, I am once again going to talk about the fact that there are Greek statues that belong together that have been stolen and have been put in the British Museum. Reunite the sisters, 2024.
The Brits don't know how to keep their hands to themselves.
They really don't.
There are a few European countries where they're just known for, like, going out and poking things.
And here I am, I'm complaining about Greek statues that have been stolen by the British. Other places have suffered more.
Yeah.
Give them back. It was hard to tell who was more stunned. Perdita looking at him, or him looking at her work. He asked her who had created the piece, and she answered that she had. Suddenly, he looked at her like she was as gorgeous as the thing she had made, and he sat down on a bench to talk to her about her art. They discussed for hours until the exhibition closed. Disappointed that she had to go, he asked her out on a date, which she happily agreed to. They had a whirlwind romance, according to her friends and family. Passionate, fast-paced, burning like a short fuse until she became pregnant in July. People who had seen the pair or heard about the relationship through Perdita expected him to jump ship. After all, they were in their early 20s, and neither seemed ready for a baby. Or at least, they assumed that Pradita's boyfriend wasn't ready for a baby. That's the thing. No one seemed to know anything about him. They heard things from Pradita, that he was handsome and kind and took her out to dinner, and that he said this or that funny thing or wrote her a gorgeous poem, but him? He was a mystery.
This is love bombing. I'm calling it, this is love bombing. Disclaimer for the audience, I have been to therapy. I'm not just throwing around therapy terms for fun. I need everyone in the audience to know that I know what I'm talking about when I say that. I'm not just using that term loosey-goosey, Dale.
No one knew who his family was, what he did for work, where he was from, or what his last name was. Most of them struggled to remember what his first name was by the time the police came asking questions about Andy's disappearance. Some had guesses, but no one knew for sure. He and Pradita had lived practically in their own little bubble. Her sister was the only one who had even met him, and while she found him charming, even she wasn't certain about his name after a few years. This was likely because Pradita refused to talk about him after he skipped town in her second trimester.
Which was particularly challenging?
Yes.
Oh, shit, I'm sorry.
Was she supposed to, like, throw a party? Oh, my boyfriend dipped, leaving me a single mother!
I meant her pregnancy! Oh. I meant her pregnancy being challenging. A challenging pregnancy is notably one of the hardest things that women that want children have to go through. Or even women that don't want children. You know what? Women that don't want children going through a hard pregnancy, that's gotta be difficult.
Some people thought that was a bad thing, others a good one. He wasn't there to support the child, but things had turned stormy for the couple after Pradita became pregnant, so perhaps his presence would have done more harm than good anyway. There was only one time Pradita talked about him after he left, and that was to her sister, very briefly, when she told her that he'd shown a few months after Annie was born, but Pradita had told him to leave after giving him a moment to hold his daughter. She said he'd been overcome, very emotional and distraught about not being able to be there for his child, and that it had upset her. It was his choice, after all, she had said. Responsibilities and family aside. This was the only mention of Annie's father's life at large that anyone had really heard.
That sounds like an excuse.
But you know, if she's saying, I don't care about his responsibilities and his family, he should be here, that does give us a hint as to why he said that he was leaving. Because it's like, what do you mean his responsibilities and his family? What did he say to you, girl? I don't know.
Responsibilities and family? You mean like a child? Your responsibility and a family.
Look! What did I find here when I opened this little box? Oh! It's a responsibility and a family!
Look at this! I found one for you!
The best thing he ever did for Pradita, her sister had said, was when he bought her the brick Cape House on Long Island Sound on the shores of New Haven.
Oh my god!
The beautiful waterfront house, built in 1919, was his parting gift to her, which raised more eyebrows of those who knew her. He had, after all, bought an entire house for her like it was nothing. Perhaps he came from money? No one knew.
Okay. What? That actually broke my voice. It was so jarring. What? He bought her a house? He bought her a house? She's expecting child. Why would you get her something outside of her means of living?
Well, she does have rich parents.
All right. Cheers. Okay.
I feel like, you know, it's not enough. But I would rather be a single mother with my own house than a single mother without my own house.
Lake houses are hard, though. I would not want to be a single mother in a lake house with a young child. You know what? Once the child is, like, six, I'm like, okay, yeah.
It's not completely on the lake. Like, the child couldn't, like, wander into the backyard and fall in the lake. There's the house, and then there's the road, and then there's the water on the other side.
But it says waterfront. Oh, okay. Cheers. It's also historical. 1919? Jesus.
Yes.
This man, like...
It's a pretty house.
He bought her a house.
But you know what's the only thing better than receiving a house as a gift is
a present family member?
Having someone to co-parent your child with.
Yeah, that would be excellent. But it seems like it's too much to ask from this man that you called handsome.
Well, he is, but I didn't say he wasn't a dick. A lot of dicks are handsome.
Well, you usually love handsome dicks.
But I don't love... Well, actually, I do love handsome dicks. I was going to say I only... I just... It's... This property was where Perdita raised Annie. Or, well, tried her best to. She provided for the most obvious of needs. Annie was always fed and dressed and bathed. She was not left alone for long periods of time, and she had her own room. But Perdita struggled to connect with her daughter. She once admitted to seeing her former lover in Annie too much.
This is a struggle that many mothers go through. I feel like we should bring attention to that, despite the fact that neither of us are mothers and have never experienced motherhood.
Motherhood seems really hard.
Pregnancy, or it's very difficult. But I just want all of you mothers to know out there, if there's any...
Belle, the Avenger of Mothers, is here.
The Avenger of Mothers.
The Mama Bear.
The Mother of Mothers. Y'all are doing a good job to those of you that are. Some of you aren't, but... Some of you I'm judging. But if you're listening to this, you're probably doing a good job.
She once admitted to seeing her former lover in Annie too much. The girl shared the same golden blonde hair and a smile like a thousand suns. It was hard for her to face her when she reminded her of the only man she'd ever loved and how he was no longer with her.
That is no good. You knew that man for months. You did not know that man. You actually did not know that man at all.
She was love bombed. And yeah, I'm saying that in a technical way. She was made to feel loved. And you know what? I get it. She was made to feel loved, and she felt that she was in love. Whether or not she was really in love, who's to say? The point is...
How would we know?
She felt what she felt.
We don't make up
her feelings are valid.
It is a little bit codependency, though, of like, this is the only person I would ever love, and I can't see anyone that looks like you because it reminds me of my deep, deep love for you. I have been to therapy and have had a codependent relationship, and therefore I'm not making fun of it. I'm relating.
It's not healthy, but it is legit for her. Neighbors said Annie was a sweet child who played outside in her yard a lot. They liked to say hello, and she always chattered back like she hadn't had a conversation in days. Annie was in a nursery, daycare, and preschool before entering kindergarten. It wasn't that Perdita always had work, it was simply that she didn't want to care for her daughter, staff complained. Once she was in school, she was always enrolled in extracurriculars and the after-school care program. Weekends were the only time she was really home. Sometimes, Perdita would ask a friend or relative to take Annie for a little while, and they always did. She was very well behaved, and though they had all been concerned about Perdita having her child in the first place, they fell in love with the little girl once she arrived.
You know what, though? In all honesty, at least she was a good provider.
Yes.
Like, she sent her kid to nursery and daycare and preschool and school and activities. There's a lot of people that wouldn't do that if they didn't have that connection with their child. There is an inherent protectiveness, yes, that I see where it's, I leave my child with professionals and I leave my child with family. And my kid will play outside, which is usually when I'm home, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's not like she's abandoning her child or anything like that. And it's okay to need a break from your kid.
Oh, 100%. Now, this is like to an extreme level, but...
Yes.
Even so, there are cases where it's not an extreme level. It just, it's written that it's to an extreme level, and I can read that it's meant to be.
Yes, it is an extreme level in this scenario. I admire her for continuing to try to do her best for Annie. And when she knows she can't do her best and cannot be a proper mother, she puts her with someone who can do that.
Yes, I agree. I completely agree. Also, I'm returning to my mother shout out.
Mm-hmm.
Putting your kid in nursery, in daycare, in preschool, usually pretty good for them, actually. It's not a bad mom thing to do. That is actually a really good mom thing to do, because, you know, kids always need other kids at whatever stage of development they're at. They really benefit from that, and they really value time with people that think like them, because they're two. There's not a lot of people in the world that think like a two-year-old that aren't two.
Yeah. And I think that when it comes to Perdita's situation, was she dropping off Annie at all these extra things because she wanted to kind of get rid of her for a while? Yes. But even then, it was something that could be positive for her development in certain ways. Midway through Annie being six, Perdita called her sister, saying she needed a break. Her sister agreed to watch Annie for as long as Perdita needed. She had no kids of her own and loved taking care of Annie as if she were her own daughter. She worked, so Annie was still in an after-school care program, but not for as long, and she got attention when she got home, which she seemed to bask in. She adored her aunt, and her aunt adored her. 4 days after Annie's seventh birthday, she was still in Georgia with her aunt. She dropped her off at school and went to work, where she was going to have to stay late for the day.
Wait. Midway through being six,
yes,
Annie disappeared.
No.
4 days after Annie's seventh birthday,
Annie went to Georgia when she was six and a half. She disappears 4 days after her seventh birthday. So if you're thinking, that's a long time to be in Georgia, it is.
Oh, so she's living with her aunt.
Yes.
Cool.
4 days after Annie's seventh birthday, she was still in Georgia with her aunt.
Happy birthday.
She dropped her off at school and went to work where she was going
big age.
She dropped her off at school and went to work where she was going to have to stay late for the day, but luckily she knew that in advance and she was able to warn Annie, so she wasn't surprised about staying at the after-school care program longer than usual. She went about her business. The program had homework time, took the kids outside to play, and brought them inside and gave them their snack. Annie had hers packed from home. Her aunt always packed her lunches because she liked it so much, and she had leftover applesauce that she was eating in her assigned seat.
How do you have leftover applesauce?
If you put two applesauce...
Was it not in, like, a pre-package?
It is. If you put two applesauce cups in one lunchbox, you can save one for later.
Okay. Okay, that's pretty sick. I love applesauce.
Bonus points if you put in an ice pack in the lunchbox so it still stays vaguely cold. She talked to the other kids as much as possible, and she got along well with them. On the day of her disappearance, though, she did approach a kid the staff would later say that they didn't recognize. He had dark skin and hair, and he was on the older end. The school was a K-8th grade kind of school, but he looked a little old to be an 8th grader. Staff saw her talking to him and thought nothing of it at the time, only reflecting and thinking of it as odd that they didn't recognize the kid later. Though there was always the possibility that he was new to the program, or came for the day, or happened to be staying late but wasn't actually part of the program and had just instead wandered into the cafeteria.
So, another little note.
Yes.
Teenagers can kidnap people. This is actually a recorded thing. Teenagers have kidnapped people. Does that make them in an inherently bad situation? Most of the time. Actually, most of the time, it's...
Yeah, like a trafficker will have a teenager capture younger kids because they seem more trustworthy and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's what happened, but...
Yeah. Well, you're just clearing up my point because I'm not coherent.
Either way, the next thing they knew, they were taking roll and realized they were missing a first grader. Little Annie Cosgrave was nowhere to be found. They put the school on lockdown and searched it, as well as called the police. They rang Perdita and got no answer, but Annie's aunt picked up the phone and rushed to the school.
Wait, but Perdita is in Connecticut. Emergency contact lists would go from current provider to...
I am not sure what order they put her emergency contact list in. I'm not sure who's on the top of that form, but it might be Perdita.
What's Perdita gonna do?
I don't know, but Perdita is an emergency contact.
I agree that Perdita should be informed. I, of course I do.
Listen, emergency contact forms are handed out to people to fill out on their own volition. So the aunt must have put Perdita down as an emergency contact.
Can you come pick your kid up? She's sick. No. I am in Connecticut.
Some witnesses said that they saw her leaving the school with a teenager, but at the same time that she disappeared, people had reported a freak flash flood, so most people's attention had been on that and not some little girl. Her name and face were all over the news that night and for many nights to come. The headlines were constantly screaming about the 7-year-old girl who had likely been snatched right under the noses of the staff. They hadn't even witnessed her go to the pickup line, as there were staff that monitored that too. Someone had either taken her from the school, or she had gone outside and been taken then. If she was taken, that is. It's the most popular theory. After all, kidnappings are not exactly some kind of unheard of phenomenon. Usually, though, they come with ransoms, unless the kidnapped children are trafficked. People were on a lookout, but that doesn't mean that no one can slip past them. A trafficker easily could have dyed her hair and changed her clothes and made her look like someone else before putting her on a plane or something similar. Unfortunately, the theory is very plausible. There's no evidence that she wasn't kidnapped. If she was, one can only hope that she is alive somewhere and can get away. However, that was 10 years ago. The odds aren't in her favor. The only conclusive evidence gathered on whether or not she was kidnapped was the confirmation of the alibis of the staff of the program, who were all cleared, as were other staff of the school. Another common theory is that she ran away. Her mother was certainly emotionally neglectful, and her life wasn't easy.
But she's in Georgia.
Perdita wasn't a warm, fuzzy feelings kind of mother. She left Annie with neighbors and professionals and babysitters and family friends and relatives. No one that knew either of them or them as a pair knew of a time when Perdita had come through for Annie the way a mother should.
Except for, you know, buying her all of the nursery and the child care and the, you know, the food, the water.
Here it would be referring more to loving her openly.
Okay. I feel like that's a form of love.
I feel like most 6-year-olds wouldn't be like, thank you, mother, for purchasing me the admission fee to this club. You know, a 6-year-old
no.
wants to be told, I love you.
Yes, of course.
They had never seen Perdita interact fondly with her child. She even looked nauseous when her daughter would hug her and would even gently push her off. Perhaps Annie was unsatisfied with her life and wanted to get away. Then again, she had just turned 7. It seemed unlikely that she would have run away with much success. If she did run away, odds are someone with poor intention picked her up. Alternatively, perhaps once she wandered off, she got lost and could not get home and had some kind of unfortunate fate in the Georgian wilderness. Less likely, considering they weren't in a particularly rural area, but it is possible. Someone should have noticed a 7-year-old wandering alone, though. Kids don't usually just show up in the middle of nowhere without an adult with them if everything is all right. And again, her face was all over the news. And as Belle mentioned, she's in Georgia. She's with her aunt. She likes her aunt.
Yeah, but if they're that close to the Georgian wilderness, I've lived next to like a national reserve.
She's not close to the Georgian wilderness, though. She's not in a rural area. They're saying maybe she like completely wandered away, like for real, and got literally lost in the wilderness.
Yeah, because I was gonna say, like, if someone wandered into the like national park that I lived next to, they would not be seen again. Sucks for them.
Some have said that it may have been Annie's aunt who wanted children of her own that took her, but she was at work the entire time, meaning that she had a solid alibi and her property was searched. Annie wasn't there. Besides, she had said to the police that if she wanted to have Annie, she would have taken her off Perdita's hands when she was born, because back when Perdita first had Annie, she asked her sister if she would adopt her. She declined, saying Perdita needed to give motherhood a chance. She stated on record that she believed that even now, if she really wanted to take Annie away from Perdita, she could have just asked. Perdita would likely have been willing to transfer custody to her. If she didn't run away or get taken by kidnappers who wanted to turn a profit, perhaps someone else got a hold of her. Some point to the odd kid, but then again, why would a random teenage kid want to kidnap a little girl?
Unless it's trafficking.
It's much more likely, some argue, that her father wanted to take her. He had been, for unknown reasons, forced to leave Perdita behind while she was pregnant, if that comment she made to her sister meant anything.
But she's in Georgia! I feel like we're really ignoring the difference between Georgia and Connecticut. Because if he wanted to kidnap his child, would he not go to Connecticut first and then try to, like, scoop her up there? And then would have to be like, oh, Perdita, where is the child? And then have to go track down the kid.
I feel like it's not hard to discover who's related to who, especially if he's met her sister before. He could easily figure out that she lives in Georgia. And actually, if I was going to kidnap a kid, I would kidnap them when they're away from their mother and their familiar town and stuff like that.
Well, yeah. Well, it's familiar now. She's been there a couple months. But, like, would you not check Connecticut first and then people would see you in Connecticut?
Maybe he did. Maybe he was, like, scoping out the school with some binoculars and was like, oh, my child isn't coming out of the school, so
my child
must be elsewhere.
My kin!
My offspring! The fruit of my loins! Clearly, he was distraught when he came to visit Annie as a baby, and he wanted to be a part of her life. Perdita, however, had shut him out and told him not to come back. Maybe he decided that he wasn't going to wait around for Perdita's permission to be with his kid. Maybe he took Annie. It begs the question of why he waited 7 years, but whatever the answer, he is the only person in Perdita's life that fits the bill for motive for wanting to whisk Annie away. When questioned about this, however, Perdita said that he couldn't do that. She wouldn't say why. She wouldn't say nearly anything about Annie's father, actually. Even his name continued to be omitted from the Cosgraves' history. The police couldn't get her to tell them who he was, what he did, when the last time she saw him was, what relationship he had to her or Annie, or anything else. All she had said was her initial statement, that he couldn't have taken Annie away. Nothing more.
She is biased. I knew I had something to say about that, but that woman is biased.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you think that your distant lover that you're obsessed with isn't gonna take your child that looks exactly like him. Of course, you would think that.
I think it's so odd that she wouldn't tell them a damn thing about him either. Not even his name.
No, I believe it. I 100% believe it. I've been in therapy for specifically sometimes to address the codependent relationship that I had in the past. And if she's still in the codependent mindset, I can see her doing anything to protect him in the rare chance that he comes back for her.
Fair enough.
Like, what if he did take Annie, and then he comes back with Annie and he's like, I want to be a happy family.
Yeah.
That would make sense to me in a codependent state.
Yeah. Because of this and the difficulty Perdita's relations had in recalling any identifying evidence concerning Annie's father, this was not a line of investigation that the police could easily follow. They asked Perdita's sister to use a polygraph to determine that she wasn't lying about not knowing nearly anything about Annie's father. Others were willing to do the same to prove that they knew nothing about him. Their results show that they were telling the truth as well.
I have a comment. Polygraphs cannot be submitted as evidence because they're not entirely reliable.
I'm getting to that.
Thank you.
Without even a name, no ability to DNA test anyone to determine Annie's parentage, and no actual evidence, the trail went cold.
Thank you.
Many were concerned with the lack of emotion Perdita showed throughout the investigation. She didn't seem worried about her daughter at all. Most actually claimed that she seemed relieved. Her state of mind didn't improve dramatically, but people did say that she was less stressed and that there was less sadness in her eyes. It was almost as if she felt that Annie disappearing was for the best. It raised many an eyebrow, but no strong connection had been drawn between Perdita and Annie's disappearance. Those who knew the troubles she faced with her daughter also insisted that no matter how hard things were for Perdita emotionally, she did what she could to take care of Annie. She loved her in her own way, they claimed. She wanted to be the best mother she could be. It was only unfortunate that that was the best mother she could be. Even then, though, she had never hurt Annie, everyone said, and never could. Her sister, who was the most familiar with the pair's troubles, has maintained that Perdita was not a perfect mother, but she would never have done something to make Annie disappear like that. Regardless, not a single sign of Annie Cosgrave has shown up in the last 10 years. Her case is still open, but nothing has come of it. The community of New Haven continue to hold out hope that one day Annie will return, but with a decade between now and when she was last seen, the odds are slim to none. But then, that's hope, isn't it? That's all for today. Thanks for listening. Send in your thoughts, theories, questions, and comments to untruecrimethepodcast@gmail.com, all lowercase, for a chance to be featured at the end of the season during our Q&A. Bye!
Bye!